Chapter 15. Ruth. A week after the visit from the police, Ruth stepped into the hotel elevator with Scott. She gripped his hand tightly. It was 7 in the evening, and they were dressed for dinner. There was no one else in the elevator, and it rode smoothly to the lobby. The elevator slowed, stopped. Ruth breathed out, rolled her shoulders. Scott said,
"You can do this."
Ruth nodded. The doors opened on the lobby. Scott stepped forward. Ruth didn't move. He turned back toward her. She held his gaze, fighting back the tears and that familiar panic that had begun to twist in her belly like a corkscrew. It felt as though the heels of her shoes were cemented to the floor.
"It's okay, honey. I'm here. Come on, let's eat," he said.
There were 3 people waiting for them to exit so they could take the elevator. A young couple and a toddler. The man looked around Scott's age. The woman was a little younger than Ruth. She was getting up from a kneeling position, still holding her child's hand.
"Just wait for the nice lady," said the woman to her little son.
He was trying to get through the doors to the lift, but she was holding him back. Ruth closed her eyes and took a step, then another. She was in the lobby. The family had passed her. She heard the rollers on the doors as they closed. Above that sound, a melody played on the hotel's PA system, a piano, something soft, slow, and jazzy. She could barely hear it over the sound of her pulse thumping in her ears. She felt Scott's hand gently tugging her forward, and she opened her eyes. The hotel lobby was dimly lit with a range of muted lamps and a huge glass chandelier that hung over the mosaic tiled floor. There were people all around, young, old, black, white, Asian, some tall and some short, men and women, strangers. Goose flesh covered her skin.
"None of these people know you. No one is watching us. We're safe, I promise," said Scott.
She held on to Scott tighter and walked with him as he turned right. Together, they made their way along a carpeted hallway. A tall man wearing a black leather jacket was coming the other way.
"It's okay," said Scott.
And it was. With every step, Ruth reminded herself that she was safe. No one was going to harm her, not while Scott was here. Yet her hands wouldn't stop shaking. That feeling of being watched, like a cold blade on the back of her neck. At the end of the hallway, a young greeter brought them into the restaurant and settled them at a table in the corner, just as Scott had requested. Ruth sat with her back to the wall, the whole restaurant in front of her. There was a decent crowd, but still a few empty tables. It was a good restaurant for a hotel. Great food served well at the Paramount earned them a loyal clientele. White linen tablecloths, subdued lighting, candles and silver, and all manned by staff who were warm and efficient. The waiter poured water for them both while Scott scanned the wine list.
"None for me, please. But you go ahead and order whatever you'd like," said Ruth.
"Not even one glass with dinner?" asked Scott. "It might help you relax."
Ruth shook her head. The last time she'd had a drink was that night, and she never wanted to touch it again. Besides, she felt it might interfere with her meds. So far, they were holding her upright, and she didn't want to test that. Scott closed the wine list, said,
"I'll just have a glass of the Malbec, please."
The waiter thanked him and left them with dinner menus and a promise that someone would be along to explain the specials.
"You're doing great," said Scott. "And did I mention that you look amazing?"
She'd spent time on her hazel brown hair, curling it at the bottom so that it caressed her bare shoulders. The dress had been ordered online and delivered to the hotel. It was her size, but it felt a little big on her. Even though she hadn't been exercising, she hadn't really been eating either. This would be her first real dinner since September 14th, the night of the incident, as Pharaoh called it. It would be Thanksgiving in 2 days' time, more than 2 months since the attack. Those thoughts came frequently now. Her life was suddenly divided between the woman she had been before that night and the woman she was now. It was a line, a life before and not much of a life after. This life felt a lot like death, or a punishment that was just as bad. She was afraid of everything, People, noises, being on her own. Because she knew the man who did this to her was still out there, somewhere. Another waiter appeared, told them all about the specials, and left them to think.
How are you feeling?
Asked Scott.
My head is a little clearer, said Ruth. At first, I just wanted everything to go back to the way it was, to reset. Now, I know that can't happen. I don't think there is a normal anymore. Not for me.
Scott nodded, said,
I know.
But she could tell by the wrinkles in his brow, his eyes darting to the left and then back to her, that he didn't know, not really. Not that he hadn't been trying, and he had looked after her so well, but he would never fully understand.
It's like someone I love is dead, but I can't grieve for them, not properly. And so the pain just goes on. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be talking about this now. This is supposed to be a special night.
He reached out, placed his hand delicately on top of her slender fingers.
I think we could get close to normal. Look at us now. We're out in public, about to enjoy a fine meal. This is what normal people do. We have to grab these moments. There will be more of them. We can take it slow, bit by bit. Maybe we can come back here for Thanksgiving on Thursday.
Ruth resisted the urge to tell Scott not to put any pressure on her.
We could still have a great life, he said.
Her lips curled into a smile, but it couldn't wipe away the strain of sadness and fear preserved in her eyes. She had seen it in the mirror, an anxious dread, frozen in her pale brown eyes, like a mosquito imprisoned for all time in a bead of amber. Scott talked about some of his friends, Gordon and his continuing marital difficulties. Ruth knew he was attempting a normal conversation. She nodded along, and then he changed the topic to the office. This was what ordinary couples talked about, and it all seemed so frivolous. Scott sighed and looked at the menu, perhaps sensing Ruth wasn't taking anything in. He was trying, and it made Ruth want to try, but it was so hard. Ruth already knew she couldn't eat. Even looking at the food on the menu made her feel a little sick. She put her elbows on the table and rested her chin on interlocked fingers. It stopped them shaking. If she could never be rid of this fear, at least she could pretend not to be afraid. For Scott, as much as for her. Families with young children had dressed up for the night, boys wearing their little neckties and girls in pretty dresses. A group of women in the corner were the loudest, clinking glasses before throwing back their coiffured heads in fake laughter. There were some couples, two groups of men who were almost as loud as the women, and a man seated alone. Ruth's heartbeat began to quicken. He sat four tables away. He had dark hair and a side parting, a black turtleneck sweater beneath his charcoal sport coat. His arm moved in a sawing motion, cutting a slice of rare steak, which he plopped into his red mouth. The pale skin on his cheeks accentuated his wet, bloody red lips. Cheekbones jutted out like an overhanging rock, and below them, a square jaw. Setting it all off was a pair of terrible blue eyes that never left his plate. The man raised his head, looked directly at Ruth, then stabbed his knife into the steak and began to cut. A waitress approached his table, carrying a glass of red wine on a tray. She placed a napkin on the table and put the wine glass on top of it. Ruth leaned forward, the background noise dimmed with a lull in conversation at the tables. The man looked up at the waitress, winked at her, said,
Thank you, sweetheart.
That voice, it was, she couldn't say it, she couldn't think it.
Ruth suddenly had to use the bathroom. Her bladder was about to let go, and she could feel her pulse throbbing in a large vein in her temples. She rose, her head spinning, stumbled, righted herself.
I need the ladies' room, she said.
Scott got up, said,
They're behind you. Come on, I'll go with you.
Ruth backed away from the table, her eyes locked on the stranger. Because he wasn't a stranger. Ruth had felt something crush her stomach and steal her breath when she saw those eyes. She imagined it was the same feeling an antelope had when it saw a pair of lion's eyes in the long grass. Something deep and old in her brain, passed down through generations, and it yelled to her, loud and clear, "There is danger here." Scott took her arm. She turned and saw the sign for the bathrooms. There was an alcove just a few feet away, leading to a short hallway. Two doors on the left, ladies at the end.
"Are you okay?"
Ruth nodded, but she couldn't speak, her chest heaving air into her lungs. Scott let go of her arm when they reached the ladies' room, but Ruth grabbed hold of him, shoved the door open, and moved quickly inside. The bathroom was well lit, and the white tile on the floor and walls made it all the brighter, a stark contrast to the dim hallway outside. A bank of mirrors above the sinks on the left, a row of stalls on the right, five of them, all with their doors open, no one else in the bathroom.
"Give me a second. Please, wait in here," she said.
Ruth made for the nearest stall, swung round and locked the door, panting, her hands pressed against the door as if she was desperately trying to hold it firm against a battering ram, head down. That's when she heard a single, faint drip, liquid hitting tile. She focused on the ground, watched another of her tears fall toward the white tile between her feet. Drip. She hadn't even realized she was crying. Not until she wiped her face, felt the wet lines on her cheeks. She had recognized him straight away. She had never been more certain of anything in her life, and it scared the hell out of her. He'd seen her, too. He'd looked straight at her as he'd plunged that knife into the meat. And then, the phrase he'd spoken to the waitress. Ruth was sure he'd said that so that Ruth could hear it. He'd found her. He'd come for her. To kill the only person alive who could possibly identify him. She sat down on the toilet seat just in time. She couldn't have held on much longer. Breathing was becoming more difficult, as if someone had their hands around her throat, or worse still, a rag covering her mouth. There was not enough oxygen in this whole hotel for her. She needed air, or she would choke and die. And then, she remembered something her counselor had told her. She was in control of her body, all of it, her breathing, her heart rate, everything. Shutting her eyes, Ruth began the breathing exercises she'd learned. A big breath in, hold it for five, exhale, and repeat. She rolled her shoulders, tensed her core. It was no good. Panic flooded her veins, and two words resounded in her head like a siren in a tunnel. "It's him. It's him. It's him."
"Ruth, are you okay?"
asked Scott. The exercises weren't working. She hid her face in her hands. She knew she had to get the hell out of the restaurant, get away fast, and it took everything she had to stand and compose herself to be able to think and move. She left the bathroom stall, saw Scott leaning against the sinks opposite, and took his hand.
"You okay?"
asked Scott.
We have to leave right now. There's a man sitting at a table alone on his own. Come and see."
Scott took her hand, and they walked out of the bathroom to the end of the hallway until the man came into view.
"There,"
she said, pointing. The man was finishing his steak, chewing the last morsel. He was the only diner sitting alone. Scott turned back to Ruth, a puzzled look on his face.
"He's not familiar," said Scott.
Ruth pointed again, and the two words that screamed inside her mind now spilled from her lips. And she had never said anything with as much certainty and conviction as she did now.
"That's him. That's the man who attacked me," she said.